because they're so passionate and they want to get the word out to as many people as they can, as fast as they can. And so then they get on social media.
You come off as a racial tyrant.
Yeah. And then somebody says something and it's like Black Lives Matter. And they're like, All Lives Matter. And they're like, saw you in your profile picture. Shouldn't have worn the blue pants, you know? And so I'm like, no one's listening to you.
if you're just tearing
people down.
But you start at home. You start with maybe your racist grandma that says some like weird, like,
yeah, like undertone.
Yeah, or maybe educated about Aunt Jemima, or pointer to a really good movie on Netflix, or a great book that you read, or a podcast that you heard. That, I think, is the way to change people's mind. And it might not change anybody's mind, but also realizing that sometimes loving somebody in spite and taking the time, and maybe it doesn't change tomorrow,
yeah,
but maybe over time.
Right.
You're listening to the Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is Love.
The Energy is the Love podcast.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is Love.
The Energy is Love podcast.
The podcast for the universe.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Okay, that's good.
I always forget to breathe. I'm like...
You do always hold your breath.
I do.
Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much. You guys you seem very, very uncomfortable. That's totally okay.
A very astute observation.
Yeah, hopefully you guys will relax. And we're uncomfortable as well. But that's just because we haven't had anybody on the podcast in a really long time. So thank you very, very much for coming out and taking the time. So introduce yourselves. We have Jasmine and Angelique, and your last name is Gordon, right?
Correct.
You guys are sisters.
We are.
Yeah.
How old are you guys?
I am 33.
And I am 35, 36 in like 2 days.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah. Born and raised in Utah. Mm-hmm. And based off of our conversations, because Jasmine, you and I have been texting back and forth to kind of set everything up, give me an idea of what the hell you think we're going to talk about, or why the hell you guys are here on the podcast.
Man, I have no idea. Why would you even reach out to us? I mean, I guess we have kind of hit a point where we're getting a lot of notoriety, and clearly, I mean, we've discussed that you saw us on social media with all of the stuff that's happening, 2020 and Black Lives Matter and everything like that. It's really interesting time for us to be Black business owners and kind of see where we're taking this state, I guess, and I assume that might be part of it.
Do me a favor and push the mic down a little bit.
Okay.
And then you can just totally push down. There you go. Perfect.
Okay.
When everything started to happen outside of Corona and COVID and all the chaos that brought, and when everything started to happen, now, immediately I think of the words that come out of my mouth and I think how, damn it, Craig. I guess the caveat should be, we're going to fuck up talking about race and culture and everything in between during this conversation. And I hope that you guys understand that we're going to fuck up and say asinine things. And immediately I'm like foot in my mouth and I can't even talk, babe.
But the thing is that sometimes those uncomfortable conversations are, A, the ones that need to be had, B, like, fucking up or not knowing what to say. Just, that's the feeling that I think a lot of people have. You know what I mean? They don't know how to say certain things or the questions to ask or how to approach people. And I think that just being open or understanding that maybe you don't know everything or there's something to be learned by everyone, no matter your skin color, you know what I mean? Even during this time, like, there's a lot of things that I've learned about my or our history or United States history, Black history, that I never knew before either. You know what I mean? So it's been a learning experience. I think all of this is a learning experience. I think if people listen and learn, and it could be a good thing. It doesn't have to all be such. I think people get so divided about certain things, or so, like, you know, walking on eggshells, kind of not wanting to say the wrong thing, but sometimes saying the wrong thing, it can open the door to learn the right thing to say or do.
Yeah, I totally agree, right?
Yeah.
And that's the goal. That's the hope, is that we can now start moving forward as like an entire country and race and everything like that. Stephanie and I have done everything that we possibly can. Well, that's not true. That's a exaggeration. We haven't done everything that we possibly can. But we have.
We're making changes.
Yeah, we have started to make changes. And the fact is, it's changes in our mindset and our thoughts and the way that we view things. And it is like shockingly depressing and sad at how ignorant I am and that I feel like I was. And so when everything started to happen in regards to George Floyd and all the protests and everything that's taken place over the last month, month and a half, we sit here and we have this podcast that we sit in our backyard and record. And it's like, we have to try to fucking do something with the small little platform that we have, because it's a place to start, right? At least for us, it's a place that we always start. We always bring everything to this table and talk about it and try to get it out and flesh it out and express it and process it. And we've done it over the years with all sorts of different stuff. And so for us, it makes sense that we're going to do it with this stuff that's in front of us now, personally, between, you know what I mean, the two of us, where it's like, we have to make changes in the way that we think, we have to make changes in the way that we process things and live in life and connect with people and communicate with people and things like that. So hence why we've asked you guys to come on the podcast in an effort to share what we have in regards to our platform and just give you the opportunity to talk about your experiences and to have awkward, uncomfortable conversations, right? And so, yeah.
Sharing the mic too.
There we go. So we could sit here all day long and try to ask you guys questions, which we probably will ask you some questions. But I think it's important for you guys to just share what you think is important at this point in time, and not necessarily on the big grand scope of scheme of things. I mean, I think that is important, but I want to know what's important to you guys in your life, day to day. Do you know what I mean? Because that's like where, I mean, that's where, and that's the stuff that, you know, yeah, global warming's important to me, but I'm here in my little town and I have to mow my lawn, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I don't know. I think that Angelique actually kind of hit the nail on the head a little bit with the people being absorbent of knowledge and, you know, other people's experiences and how to play that into their own lives. It's been really important to me to see, you know, people who were close to me, friends or other business owners in Salt Lake City and stuff like that, just kind of how they are playing with this and also how supportive they've been of like Black Lives Matter and Black business ownership. You know, we've made connections that we had never made before. And I think just seeing how it's all played out and people just having their ears open is what's been really important to me. And I didn't really even realize that that was going to be important to me. So,
yeah.
I think, yeah, being kind of myself an open vessel of knowledge. I think it is, it's the truth. But I think sometimes I need to be more open and not really realizing that I don't know everything. And so, as much as I like to believe that I do, but like being open, being understanding, I'm trying to be a lot more of an empathetic person to other people and realizing that maybe their walk in life is not the same as mine. And socioeconomic, like race, you know what I mean, gender, all of those things. And it's definitely, I've tried to be definitely sit back a little, listen a little bit more, talk less, I guess, and step in this situation. I think that being a better person, a better neighbor, a better member of my community, using my voice and or the opportunities and the platforms that I've been given in a constructive way has been, I think, very important to me. Especially lately, things that I didn't think that were as important. I went with my day-to-day life and I did my jobs and you know what I mean? But I'm all, you know, I have an opportunity to do something a little bit more. And maybe not every single day, like you know, sometimes I'm going to still get pissed when I go to Smith's and someone cuts me off or whatever, but to take that time to breathe, to realize those aren't the things, like the be-all, end-all, it's not the end of the world. There's so many things bigger than just myself out there.
We need to say something. Awkward silence.
It's,
go ahead, babe.
I was going to say, it's the pause. I'll sit with that for a minute.
So having grown up in Utah, Steph and I both have grown up in Utah mm-hmm. as well. Give me an idea, because we are, first off, I love this.
See?
Because I cannot fucking think and speak. Steph and I are white, obviously, but we're like small town Utah white, right? We're not LDS, even though we both have that in our past, in our, because we grew up in small town. I mean, if you grew up in Utah, you at least are aware of the Mormon church in some regards, right?
100%.
Yeah. And, but we're kind of naive, even though we didn't think we were naive. And I, when I think about the scope of what I don't know and what I didn't know, I mean, it's vast and huge, right? I'm very similar where I think I know everything and I've got everything like
figured out.
I understand things. I know things, and the things that I don't understand, I just don't look at. But having grown up in Utah, because in my mind, Utah is unique for a bunch of different reasons. But what was your guys' experience like? Because I think the experience, I imagine the experience growing up black in Utah is going to be significantly different than growing up in the South or back East in Chicago or Detroit or New York, right?
Yes.
And so.
So our family is, I mean, East Coast from New York.
Okay.
My mom lived in Brooklyn, and my family still, a lot of them lives through the East Coast, New Jersey, Queens area. And so coming here or being here.
Were you guys born here?
I was. She was not.
I was born in New York. But, I mean, I'm a Utah girl. I've been here for forever. But, so, then you're here, and I hear the stories that from, like, other people that live other places. And we have a lot of family that lives down, even down through the South. And so I hear their stories, and I realize that their situation or how they live their everyday life is different. But I think it's just a different... a more diverse, different, if that makes sense. Like, even I'm here, I think that certain things that you never realized that you were different, and then all of a sudden, some point in your life, there's one thing that, like, something happens, and you're like, all right, I'm not the same as all my friends. Or someone says something to you, and I'm all, oh, I am different than all my friends. And you look back at that experience now, and it is kind of eye-opening for you. Like, the first time I realized that, like, oh, I'm the black kid. You know what I mean? I'm different than everybody else. Like, I remember playing a game, and, like, someone's like, well, you can't be the mom because you're black, so you got to be something else. Or I remember when we moved, we lived in North Ogden at a time, and my mom just bought this house in North Ogden, and the kids are outside playing, and they're all, go back to Africa. And I'm all, we're not from Africa. We're from New York. And I remember going to tell my mom, I'm all, I don't know why they keep saying this to us. And then she was pissed. But
yeah.
I was just like, oh, I guess we are a little bit different. And so I think the Utah experience, how it plays into it is that sometimes because it's so small and definitely faith-based, a lot of times learning is so much focused towards faith. So I even remember going into the homes of friends, you know what I mean? They didn't understand that I was just like a kid like everybody else, you know what I mean? But I did get treated like a little bit different, or my family was a little bit different, or their family was a little bit more curious about what my family did behind closed doors. But I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No. I mean, that is true. I think that for me specifically, it's been really interesting growing up in Utah, because there, while when my mom moved here, it was to kind of give us a leg up financially. So I think that did happen. You know, we had a lot of different opportunities than we would have had she stayed in New York. And, you know, I think there was a lot more that she was able to offer us, at least right off the bat, coming to Utah. But then I think there is also some things that we probably didn't miss out on as far as culturally that we may have gotten in a bigger city. When we were younger, I'll say from my own experience, because my brothers did go to the same elementary school as we did, but we were, I think, one of maybe two Black families until I was in like second grade.
Yeah.
And then
it stayed pretty much like that until well into high school.
Yeah. We were it.
That was it. We knew who they were. And if anybody else Black came around, it's because they were related to us. Like a cousin came and lived with us for a while, and then we went back and forth. But we weren't exposed to a lot of different people besides our family, which we were lucky that they showed us a lot.
Yeah. Like our mom's was a Black Panther, and there's a lot of like history there. And, you know, some of the stuff that they, like my grandma, my mom comes from a really small family and my dad comes from a large family. And there was a lot that with civil rights and everything that my mom and my grandma believed in, my aunt, and, you know, the stuff
definitely
that they kind of grew into.
Grew up in a family of women that are extremely outspoken.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And,
my mom,
like, forced us to learn certain things. And, like,
my mom would sit. She saw, you're not going to learn this stuff in school. And I remember being a kid, and she would sit, and every year, The Roots, I don't know if you've ever seen The Roots. Like
the miniseries.
Yes, every year the miniseries would come on like TNT for like 3 or 4 nights in a row. And we were forced as kids to sit and you will watch.
Watch Roots.
You will watch Roots. And we knew it word for word every season. You know what I mean? She was going to shove some kind of history because those are things that we weren't learning in school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was the one, you got your little like Martin Luther King Day and everyone was all, yay, we're off of school. You know what I mean? The Black History Month. And they say, you sit and you read your little books once in a while and everyone kind of stares at you. That's what would always happen. It's like they would say something and everyone in the class would kind of look at you and be like, oh, yeah, that's her. Yeah. And then you get to middle school and you watch some kind of movie like To Kill a Mockingbird and someone drops the N-word and everyone looks at you again.
Yeah.
But it's because their history or the learning that they're giving us is just as limited. And we knew a little bit more because we were forced to know more because my mom wanted us to know more. But, like, our friends didn't. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible that certain things in history are just kind of, like, skipped over.
Yeah.
And as horrible as it sounds to say, like, whitewashed, but to make people comfortable, a lot of things are left out. And so I think growing up in a majority white surroundings and in a majority LDS surroundings in some ways was a disservice.
Yeah.
But some ways also kept us in a little bit of a bubble.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
To realize that not that the world wasn't as crazy, but then I also watched the world from my brother's perspective. I have two older brothers that dealt with a lot of, like, because they were Black teens, you know what I mean? They were singled out or had to deal a lot more with, you can't date my daughter, and can't be around our house, or you're not allowed to be friends with them. You know what I mean? And so it wasn't just the, like, ours was more like, they're Catholic, stay away from them. It's like, you can't hang out with our But it was, for them, it was like, don't hang around those kids, they're bad news. And it was purely because of the color of their skin. When you get a little bit older, you realize it. There was times that things happened to us in life, we even talked about it recently, that were like, oh, mom was crazy. And then it's like, oh, no, she wasn't crazy. They were definitely,
That's true. We were like, mom, settle down. I'm like, okay.
I'm like, you're embarrassing me and Dillard's. And then I realized later that she had every right to be upset because we were definitely being stereotyped. And my mom was, you know, or is. I mean,
yeah.
She's alive. She is. She's a strong, strong lady.
Yeah.
Very outspoken, and I'm happy that I learned those qualities from her. But
right. Yeah.
She definitely kept us sheltered from a lot of the stuff that was going on around us that we were just too all over the place to know. I mean,
Do you wish you would have had more of it as a kid? Do you wish that you would have, I mean, granted, watching Roots every year when it's on TV, it's good, right? But at the same time, like you said, there's so much that you're learning now, even, right, going back and looking at the history of the country and everything that's gone on. Do you wish that you would have had more exposure to it, or at least more, like, I don't know.
I don't necessarily think so. Only because I think that I was able to grow up in the way that, and maybe this is why she moved us here. And I think the part of it was, is that she knew that we would get maybe not the same treatment, but a better, fair, more equal start. And for us, we have been, like, I've been able to go, like, to really great schools and meet really great people and had the opportunity to travel all over the place, to say that that would have been the same situation I would have been in. My mom was living, before we moved to Utah, she was living in the projects in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? I used to be a professional bagpipe player in high school, which gave me the opportunity to travel all over the country.
You say bagpipe? So
cool. Yeah.
Wow.
I used to play the bagpipes in high school. And it gave me the opportunity to travel all over the country. I would have never had those opportunities. So I know that that was the reason that she moved us here. You know what I mean? But I mean, it wasn't like we weren't without racial strife. Like when we moved into the neighborhood we lived to, and when we were kids, I remember somebody, I mean, they killed our dog when we went to go school clothes shopping. One day we came home in our backyard, like, with a bow and arrow. And as kids, we're like, why would they do that? But you know what I mean? We know why they did it now when we're younger.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, when it comes to the knowledge and stuff, I think I wish that I wouldn't have taken it as such a, like, oh, Roots again. You know? And, like, forcing us to watch
the color purple. Yeah. Oh, Mom, please.
You know, because there was a huge discussion that I was a part of the other day about Seneca Valley. And I remember my mom having a conversation with a family friend about that when I was way, way, way younger. And, I mean, I just heard bits and pieces of it. And I kind of knew, but I didn't really, like, delve into it. Yeah, so many people don't know what Seneca Valley is.
You're probably talking to two of them.
Okay, so basically, Seneca Valley is was a village where slaves, mainly slaves, and then they kind of, like, let some Irish people in and stuff, and it was a profitable, you know, like, doing really well in New York. And then once... basically white
pretty
people
much, yeah.
Well,
started,
out,
so they started making money.
Yeah,
they became like made their own like culture, started doing well for themselves, became business owners, like started to progress in life pretty much. And so it was like for a while it was called pretty much like the Black Wall Street. So it was a whole area. And
well, yeah, I mean, well, basically they came in, white people came in and kicked them out. So and then that's Central Park now.
Yes, right. They bulldozed that area and made it Central Park. But that used to be a flourishing...
yeah, black community, black basically. Community,
yes.
Yeah, of like freed slaves. And then now it's Central Park. So everybody's been to Central Park, but nobody knows what Seneca Valley is.
The amount of shit like that right. has gone on is disturbing, right? Yeah. And the I mean, I don't want to go down huge rabbit holes. one of the questions that I want to ask that's popping up in my head, some of the things, because Stephanie and I, you know, if you would have talked to us last year, we'd be like, we're not racist at all. And
yeah, very proud. Yeah, we're not racist. That's well, had no idea.
But just the ignorance that exists inside of us in our head and in our
extreme
thought process and things like that. Right. And the, because a lot of stuff is being brought out and talked about, and it's good, it needs to be brought out and talked about, mm-hmm. but the overt racism that takes place, the way that black people have had to move through this country and move through experience, all that kind of stuff that we're all hopefully becoming hyper aware of at this point. So the question I want to ask you guys is kind of flipped, where there's some things that Stephanie and I are becoming aware of in our own space, in our own thought process, in our own actions, in our own behaviors, that we are now becoming aware of and altering. From your guys' perspective, what are some of the things that you maybe are looking at differently in regards to the way that you think about or interact or deal with and experience white people?
That's a really interesting question. I think, what were you going to say? Go ahead. You know, I would even say that I have been really, we come from a family who jokes through everything, right?
Yeah.
So I have made some really inconsiderate, like, comments, jokes. I mean, about every race, and even, like, it wasn't until kind of recently that I really delved into even, like, some of the strifes of the LGBTQ community, stuff like that, too. And I'm like, Kyle, I have said and done some things that I'm not proud of. Yeah, and I am not, you know, it. And so, it really has taken looking in the mirror, too, and that's what I try to kind of, I'll say preach, I don't know if that's what I actually mean, but I try to kind of put out to everyone else where it's kind of like, oh, I don't want to be your friend if you don't think Black Lives Matter, and I don't want, you know, like, this whole thing where I'm kind of like, when you sit down, that's also why I'm so, like, the podcasting is so awesome for me to really, like, come into now, because you're just having conversations, right? And everybody isn't going to think the same, and everybody isn't going to understand. Everybody's not going to know about Seneca Valley.
Right.
And there are going to be things that, you know, your truth comes from things that you've experienced, and there's going to be experiences that you've had that I won't know about. And so as we kind of take this journey as America, you know, I'll say America, it is the world right now. 2020 is really, like, making it the world. But as America together, you know, we really have to take that time to learn from each other and, like, absorb what other people are kind of putting down and see why they're thinking the way that they're thinking, because everything's not, it's not black or white, and it's not just kind of like right or wrong, or, you know, and there will be, you know, like you said, we didn't think we're racist. Like, I would be like, I'm not racist either, but I have said things.
But the thing is, too, is that I've always felt like I've always been the person to my white friends that I'm the safe friend. Like, people always feel safe asking me the question that, well, maybe you shouldn't ask everybody that, but I love you and I'm not going to judge you. So if you have, like, do you guys sunburn, or, like, let me touch your hair, like that kind of weird stuff. Like, I've always been the friend that can, people have been comfortable having those conversations with. And so I think navigating conversations with, like, my white friends, or anybody, not even non-friends, you know what I mean? Sometimes I think now I'm just more quicker to not brush things off as a joke, but be like, this is something that could hurt somebody's feelings. Like, I deal with passive-aggressive racism every single day. I run a honky-tonk bar on the edge of North Salt Lake, for Lord's sake. Yeah. Like, no one knows that I run a country bar, for Lord's sake. And, like, you know what I mean? People say some real crazy stuff to me sometimes. And so now, like, I don't let people get away with being disrespectful. But if people have questions, I'm definitely open to answering any of those. Not sometimes the bar setting or certain settings are not the question time to have those conversations, but I am being open and honest and available and genuine, you know what I mean, and not trying not to take things personally all the time when it's not meant that way, but being available for those conversations for people, I think, are the way that I'm trying to, like, make sure or keep those lines of communications open with friends until someone's being a jerk, and then I'm like, not today. But I think with conversations with my white friends is that if you have those questions, being open and here to hear them.
Yeah. I think genuine is like kind of hit the nail on the head too, just because that's like, you know, I'll be the first to say, kind of going back to our upbringing and stuff, there was a decent amount of privilege in certain ways there. You know, and we didn't, even though we even grew up kind of in a single parent family and stuff like that, there were struggles there, but we had a lot. We really had a lot. And like Angelique said, we had a lot of opportunities and stuff like that. And so I think that people really have to kind of understand when you're kind of looking back in history, why so many people feel like they didn't have these opportunities when stuff like, you know, stuff like Seneca Valley and Black Wall Street and stuff like that kind of sets the tone, sets the platform for how African-American people have had to move forward in history. And I think that's what people are kind of discounting and, you know, not really fully understanding about the race in general.
So recently, Steph and I both listened to this podcast. Change. Pull it up, baby, so I'm not sitting here.
On Being.
There you go. That's the name of the podcast, On Being. and the guy that was on the podcast is?
Rossi?
Yeah, just read it rather than
trying
to pull it up.
And... I was so close to... It's because I have other things on my mind.
Well, like, speak up.
Well, I'm trying, but like, I don't know where to like... I don't know.
This
I'm
just, guy's like, name.
You hit me with the... I'm sorry.
Resma Menakem, I'm terrible with all sorts of different things. Anyways, the reason this stood out to us, and Stephanie and I do so much work personally in regards to like our own shit, our own trauma, processing through everything from the beginning of time that we've existed, and we're continually processing through emotional trauma and physical trauma and abuse and all sorts of different stuff because we have copious amounts of it in our life. And one of the things that we both believe like wholeheartedly, have you guys ever heard of the concept and the idea of like epigenetic stuff?
Like, maybe. I don't know where you're going.
I don't
karma
know.
Karma or like...
Karma kind of, but the idea behind, I can't remember the actual term of it, but essentially... The stuff that you're so the like
14 generations, is that where you're going?
Yeah.
No, that's not where
so
you're
the
going.
Pregnant mom that is underneath or under copious amounts of stress, whether she's in an abusive relationship or financial hardship or whatever she's experiencing, the emotional, physical experience of that pregnant mom is going to be transferred to the child, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. of the way that bodies work and genetics and all that kind of different stuff. So the idea of epigenetic, I don't have it. but the concept and idea that we are carrying the trauma from past generations repeatedly over and over and over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. Just continually.
100%.
What's that?
Oh, I think I get it 100%.
100%, right? Yeah. And so that's the thing that I don't think the vast majority of people are really looking at. And he does a really good job. He does it way better. Like he's a smart guy and he's a, I think he's a therapist or something like that.
Trauma therapist.
But the impact of what that actually is on people, right? And so think, like, tell me, you guys, from your experience, the concept and idea of what that would play out and look like in your lives, in your experiences, not just from your own personal, because we all have like our parents, our grandparents, our great grandparents, but on the bigger scope of things, right? For Black people as well as for white people, what that feels like.
You okay?
I don't know.
I would say that as you look at Black history and back, like, couple generations back, so you watch your family struggle and not do too well, and sometimes I think that sometimes when a community or a person is kind of set up to fail, almost like a caste system is kind of how it works. So mm-hmm. like say you as a kid you watch your mom just struggle and you want to do the best to like help her, and you guys live in this constant like hand-to-mouth kind of atmosphere. And then a lot of times you just can't break that. You leave school early to try to help your family. Yeah, a lot of kids don't know anything better than like the only way out of this hand-to-mouth existence is some kids start selling drugs. You don't go to the best schools. You don't get out of the neighborhood that you were raised in, which is already filled with crime, with people that don't know better, so they don't do better. And it just makes it a whirlwind of kind of, and then you're, people are having kids that now... You're not able to stay home and give them that special attention or the extra love or the extra time because you've got to go to work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so a lot of times when you're stuck in these communities constantly, you're just put in the same cycle over and over and over again, which is why I feel like we were lucky when you say, would you rather have had those experiences? We wouldn't be where we are right now if we would have had those experiences. Because, I mean, my mom struggled. I watched her struggle as a single mom. Like, luckily, my grandma was a strong lady and helped her out a lot. But that's always pushed the value of education on us. Always, you know what I mean, didn't want us to work too early because wanted us to concentrate on going to school. We wouldn't have ever had those opportunities if we wouldn't have gotten out of the where we were at the time. But I've also watched other members of my family that were able to leave that area or that life get stuck there. It doesn't mean they're bad. Mm-hmm. Doesn't you know what I mean? They didn't ever have a place to jump off from. I mean, we were in a place where, I mean, because we were in a good neighborhood, my mom went to work all the time. She worked 2-3 jobs our whole childhood. We were lock-key children. Luckily, we lived in a neighborhood.
We lived through it.
Yeah. Like, we took care of ourselves. Every single morning, we got ourselves up and you feed yourself. And when Ninja Turtles came on, you knew it was time to walk to school.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Then you come home and, like, dinner was in the oven and we were just, like, kicked it by ourselves all day long. But, like, there are neighborhoods like that where it's not safe to be at home. And stereotypically, in the Black communities, a lot of times, you know what I mean? Moms are doing that all day long. And then you're at home and you're watching, sitting at home and you're watching someone that sometimes isn't making the best choices somehow get ahead. And you think that that's the way to get ahead. You don't get shown very much. You see your mom working really hard and struggling and is stressed. And you're like, is that the way that you necessarily want to go? No, doesn't seem too glamorous at the time. And then so there's like a constant, like a cycle of almost oppression and an oppressive state of mind. And that's why when you hear like sometimes these movies or music that feed this lifestyle to people because they're looking for a way out or something a little bit more. It's not because they're people are not smart. It's because you kind of do with what you're kind of handed to you. And so you would love to do more, but like, honestly, 1 out of 50 of those kids are going to make it out of that lifestyle or make it out of there. And they will go on to repeat that cycle of struggling. Their kids are going to watch them struggle. And it's because those neighborhoods, no one feeds any money or assistance or help into those neighborhoods. And so those kids will continue to struggle and have another generation of kids underneath them that are born under the same oppression and weight.
And too young. You know, how often do we say that, like, kids having kids are, you know what I mean, those kids are never going to have those same, like, opportunities as a parent who, and I know this is part of the reason that we've chosen not to have kids at least yet is because it's like, we really want to be established. We really want to have something to give or show or
have
do.
That time.
And time too. And so when you have, you know, teenage parents and then they're struggling and then they didn't nurture the correct way and stuff like that. And so much of that cycle too, at which we've all, you know, I don't know a single person that is like, no, not the truth, you know? So there's so much of that I think goes on in those neighborhoods.
Yeah, less
or
of an emphasis is put on higher education and more of an emphasis is putting on day-to-day making it.
Yeah.
And so you watch someone live like that and you feel like that's the only way that life is, which is really sad. And people don't realize, like, I know that it would blow people's minds to go back. Like, we went to Georgia. The majority of the households in more, I wouldn't even say rural, because not all of them are rural neighborhoods, but African-American neighborhoods, to think that most of them don't even have internet connection inside of their house.
Right.
Which is something that, like, out here, you're like, who doesn't have the internet? You know what I mean? These kids don't have access to any of mm-hmm. those things out there. And a lot of the money that goes back into the schools are from people that own homes in the area. These people don't own homes there. You know what I mean? Somebody else owns some homes. They're renting them. So there's no money being filtered back into the school. It's places where kids are sharing books. Kids aren't getting, the only meals they get are at school. They don't, their parents can't afford to do more for them. Not that they don't love them or they're not trying, but you know what I mean? They don't have the lights on half the time or something to eat when they get home after school. So it's hard to prosper or do better for yourself when your community, everyone in your community is living like that. You can't really get ahead. Yeah. So the fact that we were not, didn't have to live like that all the time. And I'm not saying that there weren't times in our life that it wasn't like that. You know what I mean? We,
I mean, I think our mom did a good job of like,
we didn't know we were poor.
Yeah, exactly.
We thought that we were having breakfast for dinner on Saturdays because pancakes and my mom is awesome. It's not because we knew that that's all we had was a thing of Bisquick.
Yeah.
And that's what we were eating. But you know what I mean? She did a good job of, but I know that she struggled a lot to pay the bills. And, but she did that because she didn't want us to be in a situation where we would be stuck somewhere.
Yeah, or, you know, even felt responsible, you know, for, like,
household bills.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've seen friends or family members in other, you know, other areas, other, go back to the New York or the South, where they're expected to start earning a living really early in life to help your family out. And then can't concentrate on school. The idea of being able to get a higher education isn't real. Mm-hmm. Who's going to pay for you to go to college?
Yeah.
You're kind of set up kind of to fail. Or if you want, if you do make it to college, you're going to a very limited community college. If you want to do something more, you who has the money to take off 6 months of school to go be an intern somewhere? You know what I mean? Those are usually a privileged position for someone from a higher socioeconomic background. So to be able to go and be an intern or do something more, just aren't options that are afforded to a lot of, I would say, these kids, these people in general. So being stuck just kind of in the same cycle. And not, the get ahead is very, a lot slower. The wheels turn a lot slower when you're already set back so much farther than other people.
What do you want to say, babe? Sorry.
Thank you for sharing so much. These are pretty amazing. I'm just in awe at how much is kept out of the schools. Like you said, how much that you, like, you had this powerhouse of a mom that was like, I've got some information. You were going to have this information. I didn't have that information. We did not learn that in school. The things that we thought we knew, the things that I'm helping our kids with homework. Mm-hmm. I, you know, how so much you forget and then you relearn it with your kids. It didn't come up. I've learned more recently and been able to teach our children, our son that's living with us. Like, so much has changed just from now that we know to start digging and where we're at. And the information that we are given is not, it's not accurate. It's a lie. It's just a lie. It's horrible.
And I wouldn't even say necessarily like a complete lie. I think that sometimes with any kind of history, sometimes they want to cover over certain things to make people feel good. You know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to talk about all like what
the
people did to
stuff.
Like the Native American people. Like, oh, Pocahontas. And like, they don't want to talk about all the bad things that happened. And it's the same thing, I think, with like even the Black culture. Like, yeah, we skimmed over slavery a little bit. And like,
well, it's the problem with fucking white people. Do you know what I mean? Because they have done all of it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not to say, because this is the thing that happened recently, too. This is, like, completely, in no way, shape, or form, oh, my God, I don't need to give, like, cautionary caveats before I express things, right? But every, like, throughout history and time, like, we go back to, like, ancient Roman Greek time and things like that, right? There's always been slaves. There's always been people in charge and people that, you know, that they were using for manual labor, for all sorts of different stuff, right? 100%. Every single culture throughout time and history. It doesn't make it right. And it's not like justifying, oh, you know, sorry, Black people, this has been happening forever. That's not the case. It's fascinating to me to look at. We watched a movie and Steph didn't like the movie. It's a pretty hard movie to watch. It's called Apocalypto. It came out several years ago. but it was about like the Mayans and the Aztecs way back in the day. And literally you had like the one tribe that comes and rapes, pillages, and plunders and takes everybody, and so that they can enslave them to build their temples on top of like human sacrifices, right? So that's like Mexican culture. That's where Mexican people, that's the, you know, what Mexican people had to look for back in their ancestry.
Yeah.
Native Americans, same thing, right? White people come in, just fuck everything up and kill everybody.
Yep.
But, and like you said, we don't talk about it. We just completely skim over the top of it, right?
Exactly. Everyone's all Thanksgiving.
Exactly. And that's the thing that's like, when, I guess it's, I mean, it's not, I guess, it's when white people are the people that are writing history, when we're the ones that are putting things down on paper, of course we're not going to put that. Like if I were to write my own personal history, I would kind of just skim over the thing that I did when I was 18 that I don't really want people to learn about.
There was a little incident.
Right? Yeah. Went to jail, yada, yada, yada. Everything's fine. I didn't go to jail. But so it makes sense on one hand, but it's also like we can't allow that to happen anymore.
Exactly.
And the concept and idea too that like really pisses me off earlier when you were talking about just the cycles repeating themselves over and over and over and over again, right? What you experience as a child typically is what you're going to recreate as an adult with your children. I remember when I first had kids way back in the day and I was like setting up the house, I put the garbage can in the bathroom in the same spot that the garbage can was in the bathroom growing up. Like even just the simplest thing like that, yeah. Right? Because I'm recreating. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where does the garbage can go? Oh, it goes right there. That's where the garbage cans in the bathroom go,
yeah, right?
Right. So I was thinking as you were talking about that, how racism is just handed down generation to generation. But the whole idea, like this is the thing that's really pissing me off right now with white people, is how they don't, you know, maybe they're not quote unquote racist, but the same subtle under the surface racism that exists is handed down from generation to generation as well. And the unwillingness to actually slow down and like look at that and to sit with that and to think about that.
And in that uncomfort, I think.
And feel it. I even had, like recently I had a girlfriend that she made a really something that like made me kind of think about myself. She was like, I take Peloton classes all the time. And she's like, I look through and she's all, how many, there's all these African-American teachers on here and I've never taken a class from a single one of them. And she's all, it made me sit back and think to myself, why yeah. have I never taken one of their classes? Was it, do they think it's not going to be a great class? Do they think that I'm like, I won't like the music or there's something that I won't relate to with this person? She's all, maybe I had to look and think of myself. Like, you know what I mean? It's just how I, inside, there's no reason why I should have never taken this class. You know what I mean? It's something within me. Like, so, and she took the class and loved it. She said it was one of the best classes she'd ever taken. Maybe she just said that. But sometimes it makes you like kind of think those, like, why do I feel this way? But I think that sometimes it's just because this is just how you're raised, and you stay with your people, and you do kind of, and you don't want to think that you have these biases, that you're raised with these biases, and I don't think it's even necessarily, I hate using like racism for everything, but like, it's so hard to say like, cause you're a racist, but I don't think it's even necessarily racist because there's sometimes that like, it's just like the garbage can in the place. Like This is where it goes. This is just how it's, everything's always been. So we just keep doing it kind of the same way.
Is that the boy?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what you want.
Oh God. We tell him every time and he's still like.
We can't time.
Mijo, what do you need? Who? Dylan? Okay, you can play, bud. God, you guys are very smart to wait to have children. They're wonderful and amazing angels, right? But God. What were we talking about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, like, also, you know, when so much of this is social media these days, but it's one of those things where, you know, you're scrolling through social media and you're like, Black Lives Matter, all lives matter, Black Lives Matter, you know, this whole thing. And so I've noticed with a lot of the people who are like, all lives matter, stop being so sensitive about Aunt Jemima, and, you know, this whole thing. And I think that there's so many people who are scared that they are racist or that they are biased. And
that they don't want to sit in that.
They don't want to sit in that. What's
everyone's important. Everyone is important. That's not what anyone's saying. It's that, like, everyone's not important. I'm not saying everybody else should drop dead or, like, blacks are the best.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're pretty awesome, but we're not, like, better than anybody else. The thing is that when you realize that maybe someone hasn't been given the same chances as you in life, purely based off the color of their skin, that maybe sometimes people are looked at different or passed over for a job or, you know what I mean, stereotyped a certain way. That's what I think more of the movement is. I'm not saying everyone should change everything about themselves and, like, be pro-black all the things all the time. It's just taking some time to realize that some people have a different life walk than you, and it's based purely off the color of their skin, and it's not necessarily how they want it. It was not that long ago that being, for me, to be married to a white gentleman, you know what I mean, was illegal.
Yeah, it's like the 60s.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or that, you know what I mean, the schools were segregated. There are still schools in the South that are completely segregated. There are schools that aren't segregated and still have segregated dances, segregated proms that don't, you know what I mean? That happens to this day.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so...
How do we not know this? How is this not...
Yeah, I mean, it's
because we're white, we live in this little tiny fucking town.
And see, that's the real truth.
That's one of the things that, like, we've done differently. Once with this information coming in, and then we saw our son who we were watching. I don't remember which one we were watching, but we have been taking those steps to educate ourselves. And what can we learn? Where's the differences that we can make? Not sitting back and saying, okay, tell me what I should do. We're being proactive on finding what we can do. And then when we have tried to include our son in it, our words fell out of his mouth. He's like, I'm not a racist. I'm a good person, so I'm okay. And then it was like, okay. So we're going to talk about not being a racist and being anti-racist. And this is, and so really educating him from the information that we're getting and seeing how things are changing, and then watching him process that and seeing those realizations happen in our child. It's just, I'm so happy that he's not, that we're breaking that cycle and that he's going to see it differently. But I'm just heartbroken that we have been so blind and that so much has, just because we are not doing it, how much us not knowing and just like how much pain we cause, you know, how much ignorance is so damaging. And I can't believe all I didn't know.
That ignorance is just kind of like pushed on people is the thing.
Yeah.
That you keep, I agree with that, people ignorant, and as the United States in general, you keep people ignorant, you keep them complacent.
Yeah.
You keep happy and you have your happy life and everyone's doing the same thing. You know what I mean? When things start bubbling, you see how angry people get over a protest. And it doesn't even have to be like the looting and all of those other things. A protest. I see people getting so upset over,
why are we doing this in Daybreak?
Right? It's like, why do you have to block Forest South for your freedoms?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like those kind of things. Like, it's like, what does that have to, like, oh, God, it takes you 10 more minutes to get to the grocery store. You know what I mean? But there are people that, you know what I mean, won't make it to the grocery store because they were shot for walking down the street for the color of their skin. They will never get to be able to make that walk. That people that lose their kids all the time, I read these stories to the point where it brings me to tears.
There's things I can't even watch.
I don't watch them anymore.
Yeah.
I have black brothers. I have black nephews. You know what I mean? And I watch these kids. I watch these young kids that have been murdered for no reason.
Huh.
And not just by, you know what I mean? The Trayvon Martins of the world. These kids that were doing nothing more than walking home with a bag of Skittles. And they looked suspicious. They'll never make that walk. It's hard to talk about, but people need to realize that, like, the small inconvenience that is for them, it's like,
right,
it's a life altering for somebody else. And over, and it breaks my heart sometimes, even on social media. I've been trying to not be on social media very much because I become like a keyboard warrior for a second. I'm all, I got to take a break.
Yeah.
Because I see the things that people say, and it's like, oh, if they weren't criminals, and if you weren't breaking the law, I'm all, listen, I'm not a criminal, or at least I don't break the laws that I feel like matter. You know what I mean? And I damn well hope that if someone came and shot me in my house, you know what I mean, after they broke down,
outraged.
Exactly. If I was a Breonna Taylor and someone broke into my, or didn't knock, came into my house, murdered me in front of my family, and then arrested my boyfriend for attempted murder for trying to defend me, you know, that someone would march and make somebody else's life uncomfortable because I'm not here.
Right. Yeah. I think there's also that moment where you've got the people that are like for it, even the people who don't fully understand it, but they're like, yes, this is wrong. I feel wrong about this, and I feel wrong if I don't say that I feel wrong about this. And then you've got the people who are like, well, the black people are criminals and they do this, and you know, you've got that. And then you've got this like middle gray area, right, where people want to be on maybe this side, but then they go, you know, you have all these people that are like, I'm sick of people saying these things. Can't we just be one race, the human race? And I'm like, oh, absolutely, we would love that. But we've got to like deal with the uncomfortable truths first, because exactly. We can't just continue to skip over to one race, the human race.
Exactly. We got to do a lot of work before we get to one race, human race.
So that's like the ingrained systemic societal whitewashing that white people have ingrained in us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's like, come on already, guys.
Sweep it under the rug.
We're just all one race. Get over it. Right. We all just need to kumbaya and hug and move forward in love and light, and everything's going to be fine. Right.
Exactly.
And obviously it's not. Yeah. I want to ask you guys, I don't know if you, you probably don't know this because, how are you doing, babe?
Good.
You doing okay? Okay. I used to be a police officer a long time ago. And so it wasn't super long ago, but it's been a while. I want to give you guys the opportunity, if you have like stupid questions that you want to ask a police officer, or why
Or not stupid questions.
I'm sorry.
Do you have any stupid questions for him? Like,
that's, you're right. That's,
I know. Any questions?
I don't know if you guys know any police officers. I mean, do you know what I mean? As far as like you're the black friend that people can come and ask about sunburns, right? Mm-hmm. So do you have any questions that you want to ask or know or understand? And it's not justifying anything that police are doing right now or that police have done, but I very, very well used
opening
to
the dialogue for uncomfortable conversations.
Correct.
Here, right?
Yeah, okay. Thank you, sweetheart.
I actually
you're
love
welcome.
That. Go ahead.
You know, actually, I know that people are like anti-police these days. I don't mind the police.
Our mom was in...
And my mom was in youth corrections our whole entire life.
Oh, wow.
And so we were...
Anytime we weren't even allowed to say cop, we had to say police officer.
And when we were younger and we got in trouble, which happened often...
enough, yeah.
If we got in trouble and the police came because we were doing some stupid kid stuff, you know...
Teenagers,
like,
yeah.
They'd be like... I will say cop now, but every cop in town knew my mom, and they were like, we're going to drop you off with her because she could do much worse to you than anything that we could do. So I never, for the most part.
One of my mom's best friends was the sheriff, you know, and we had so much of that in our lives growing up.
A lot of respect for police and law and order and justice. I don't think that being a police officer or having police is bad. I think that sometimes everyone has like a bad apple, like a bad person. I think that sometimes, and I don't know if what your experience was, but I feel like sometimes there's a code of silence. I don't know if that's a real thing, but like, I feel like even in like our daily lives, like working in like the service industry, like say you give someone bad service and they start attacking your friend. First, you defend your own, and then afterwards you're all, you fucked up. You know what I mean? I tell my friend later, I'm all, you were an asshole. But yeah, to the person that's like, listen here, Karen, like, calm down.
Back your, yeah, you like back
you
your
back
staff.
Back your own.
Yeah.
And so I think that, I don't know, it makes it such a hard, hard thing. Like, people are so, like, anti-police or anti-policing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's because it comes from a place where it's more like they're, I don't know how the training works. I don't do any of that stuff. But I think that in certain areas, you are told, you know what I mean? Or led to believe that this is the person you look at. This is like, I know that even in New York, they had a stop and frisk for anyone. And it was, they were told to stop and frisk young African-American gentlemen, you know what I mean? For whoever seemed suspicious. And it was all young African-American men. And so that gives a bad taste in people's mouth, but it doesn't mean that all police are bad people or all police have.
And like black people are police. Yeah. Like, I'm like, I know so many black people who are police officers, or even our god sister works, you know what I mean? She's not like an everyday officer, but she works within the police force
yeah.
in Atlanta. And so like you can be pro law enforcement, or at least for the most part, clearly, you know, there's the one thing where I think people have, you know, we'll take, there's doctors all over the world, right? And they are curing cancer, they're, you know what I mean, they're treating cancer and they're doing all these things. But had there been a bunch of malpractice situations where people have died from it, I don't think it's wrong of the people to be like, we need to look at the training here, you know? And so, yeah, just because I think it's hard with social media and stuff right now for people to kind of like take yourself out of it and look at the bigger picture. And you just see somebody post something that you don't agree with, and then you're like, no, I have a police officer that I love, and then they're like, no, Black Lives Matter, and then it's like
blue lives, black lives, blue lives. But the thing is it's all, it could be both lives matter, you know what I mean? Police officers put their lives on the line all the time, and there are criminals out there of every race, you know what I mean? I see them all the time downtown. But there's criminals all the time. Please keep me safe. I love them. Keep them around all the time. But I do think that sometimes maybe people, just like we're having this talk, maybe there needs to just be a little bit more of a conversation, because people like to not believe that race is a factor, but it definitely is a factor. And maybe just a little bit more training on, like, ethnic training even. I've seen some of the numbers on, like, training hours and those kind of things. Like, my brother-in-law is a police officer. Well, he's not my brother-in-law yet. We're getting married. But my brother-in-law
if
is...
he's lucky, he'll be your brother-in-law.
Exactly. He's a police officer. I know that. I mean, for me to be a cosmetologist, it took 2,000 hours of training. Not quite that much to be a police officer, and he uses a gun. I was just using the curling iron and a little bit of bleach. But you know what I mean? Like, maybe part of that training needs to be on learning about other ethnicities and communities, and that maybe that would stop some of this, or maybe a little bit more training on de-escalating situations would maybe be when I think that people get so hyped on this, like, defund the police. Defunding the police isn't disbanding the police department. I think it's more like figuring out ways that before it becomes a police state, before it becomes someone's shot or in a chokehold or being kneeled on camera, there's so many steps that we can take and put some of that money back into the community that it doesn't have to always be that, the end, yeah. That kind of end. Yeah. But I am definitely not anti-police.
Yeah, I think it also, and one thing that I've kind of been saying, I haven't really been able to say it publicly yet, but this racism, I feel like the police officers are carrying a huge brunt of America's problem, right? So, like, racism is America's problem. Clearly, there are individuals on the police force, or even, like, an essence over the police force that has kind of been like, well, that could be a problem over there. You know what I mean? Keep your eye on that one. But this is America's problem, that we haven't educated people, that we haven't, you know, you mean, done what we needed to do in public schools or in training for, you know, the people that are going out here. It's just that they have the badge and the gun, and they're kind of making the rules. And so then this is kind of how it plays out. And then you also have these other people who think they're police officers, and then they're like, he was looking in a window and so we shot him. And then you're like, no, that is not how that should go down at all. So it's just, it's kind of been this thing that America's never taken care of, and then now it's spiraled. So yeah.
So any crazy questions for a police officer?
I don't know if I have any police officers.
I mean, yeah, I guess my one question, I guess, for you, and I know you said that you've grown up here, and so I don't know, is there anything that you would say, because I have been getting a lot of stories from people where they're like, I would have never admitted this if this wasn't... you know, all of this stuff wasn't surfacing, but is there anything for you that you saw or were a part of during being in like the police force that you were like, yeah, that was probably wrong, or, you know, a bit uncomfortable or something like that?
Are you guys comfortable right now? Like, do you guys, it seems to me, and the other thing too, like I probably should have before we push record, like, I'm pretty blunt and straightforward and to the point. And Stephanie always has to like remind me and help me remember that, like, when people don't know me really well, or if you're not familiar with me, then I think sometimes I come off as like super in your face. And but are you guys are comfortable, right?
Yeah,
yeah, we're fine.
Okay.
That was a leading question.
That was. You're comfortable, right?
Yeah, we're okay. Good.
There wasn't. I worked in the next town over from this one. So it's a bigger city than Grantsville. The population is like 45,000. But it's predominantly white, just like Grantsville is, just like Utah is, right? And so we didn't have a lot of interaction with black people, just because there wasn't a lot of black people in the town or in the city. So I never saw... I also used to work at the Salt Lake County Jail, which is like the second biggest correctional facility in the state, right? Outside of the state prison. And that was, did I ever see anything that I was like, that's not right? Absolutely. There was copious amounts of things that I saw that I didn't like and that wasn't right. Some of it, there was some of it, especially at the jail, just because there was more interaction with that population, and that population was much more diverse because it was in Salt Lake City. But... The problem is police officers and the scope of like law enforcement and the they think so differently than everybody else. And so what a police officer views as normal or okay really isn't okay. And I'll give you an example. It was New Year's Eve one year and somebody shot themselves in the head. So we show up and the guy is on the ground having just shot himself in the head. And there's like six of us standing in a circle around him, joking and kind of making fun of the situation and having a laugh at the expense of what has just taken place. And I understand why it's that way for police officers, because it's the coping mechanism of being able to go through an experience like that. But it's fucked up. Like, it's fucked up. And when you see it from the outside, you see six police officers standing around a dead body laughing and having a good time, right? And nobody's having a good time. It's a terrible fucking experience across the board for everybody. Nobody wants to be there. It's terrible. It's horrible. It's sad. It's a tragedy, right? But that's not all right. And that happens in various ways, scopes, and different things all the time in policing, because it's coping mechanisms to deal with the stuff that you have to deal with as an officer. So there was lots of stuff like that that I saw that I'm like, that's not all right. That's not okay. That's wrong. But it's hard to change things from the inside. It's hard to address things. It's hard to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as far as like something that I never witnessed anything that I would have been like, I mean, that's not true. Looking back, I can think of experiences where people were just treated like total dog shit. And, I mean, it's terrible.
Did you see anything, like, in your training or something that you thought that should be different, like, in how you were trained to, like...
Well, during it, no, right? During it, it's very much like, you know, but looking back now, I mean, this is stuff that Stephanie and I have been picking apart and thinking about and talking about over the last several weeks and months. And, I mean, it's the training for becoming a police officer is a joke. It's just a joke. It's way too short of a time. It's, you know, the vast majority of what police officers do is just interaction with people. It's just conflict resolution. It's literally just having conversations with people. And the vast majority of the time, all you're doing is documenting things. You're just writing reports and documenting things. So you would go and talk to somebody and just document what happened and what took place, right? Mm-hmm. That's such a small portion of the training. You know, human interaction and being able to carry on a conversation and to, like, look somebody in the eye and have compassion and consult and all of those things that would help so much. It's just not trained or taught or even really discussed. Instead, it's like self-defense and it's firearms and it's arrest control tactics and it's law. We have to learn so much law about the code and this, that, and the other. And all of that's horse shit. That's like maybe 5% of what you actually do as a police officer. And the rest of the time, you're literally just talking to people and writing reports. Do you know what I mean? They're glorified documentarians. That's all they're doing is traveling around documenting what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And I mean... we don't need to go off on my big, huge soapbox on what policing needs to be and what it is, but there's massive problems. And the other part of it, too, is it's like what we've been talking about with the systemic aspect of culture and society and the way that things have... policing grew up in that as well, right? Law enforcement grew up in that society and in that culture. So it's obviously going to have those same things. It's obviously going to have those same kind of undertones of racism and not treating everybody the same way, even though I'm not a racist or I'm not a bad guy, right? Bullshit. It's everybody needs to really, really, really change the way that we're looking at things and addressing things. Right. But
it's just so unfortunate that instead of all that training on the takedowns, you know what I mean, to spend that little bit more time on doing conflict resolution and being able to talk to somebody or showing empathy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Spending a little bit more of that time and energy could probably change so much in the way that police are looked at by people of color, of all people of color.
Yeah.
Which is so unfortunate. Yeah. And unfortunate for them because they're putting, if you put somebody out on the street with a coloring book of, or a, you know what I mean, like three colors, you know what I mean? You don't have a lot of things to make a picture out of. So you're only doing the best you can with the information that you're given or with the learning that you're getting given. Some people are more compassionate people or have that in them, but some people have to learn. If someone doesn't teach you how to do certain things, you can't expect more of people that are never given the tools to do those things. Mm-hmm. And then you have to face the criticism of the entire world, you know what I mean, when you're caught on camera doing something, but sometimes you're just not taught better. Or taught, or where to go, or if you see something bad, who to go to. You know what I mean?
Well, there's so many people that just shouldn't be police officers.
That's
just
true, too.
Period, right? You just should just not be a police officer. And the vast majority of people, I mean, it's the rarity that people get into law enforcement because they, I mean, the vast majority of people are just looking for a job.
Yeah, I think that people don't fully understand that either, and that it's never to talk poorly on police officers or military or anything like that. But, you know, when you're... when I was 18, you know, every guy that I knew that was like, we're going to go into the military, it wasn't because they were passionate about United States, because they wanted to get a paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, okay, even maybe that there's some opportunities to like travel and do these other things and places to grow within the military, which is all well and great. But they were never like, yes, America, and well, I can't wait to like robe myself in a flag. It was like, it's I need a money, job, right? And I'm not really sure what I'm doing with my life, and I'm a teenage boy, and exactly. So I'm going to like jump into
that.
And maybe that's the same thing with like police. Yeah. I watch 40 episodes of Cops. I could probably do this. I'm fast. Seems like they make pretty decent money. Only got to go to school for a little bit. Yeah.
And for the most part, they're like praised. You know what I mean? That's an honorable job. It's not, you know, they could be go out and be a garbage man or something like that. But then it's like, oh, that doesn't sound like my parents are going to be like ranting about me to their friends. I'm going to be a police officer. And yeah, sometimes I think there is a lot of people that aren't mature enough to kind of take on that type of weight. Yeah.
If I mean, like, right, your brain's not even fully developed until you're like 25.
Right.
Right.
And for the men, last thing. Sometimes long.
Well, for most people, right, it's not till you're 55. And then you kind of understand what's going on in life and you got your shit squared away. Ladies, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to say, share, talk about? I want to give you the opportunity to promote all your businesses and websites and stuff. But before that, is there anything else that...
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered a lot. It was a lot of good conversation, a really honest conversation.
Yeah, no, thank you for having us, actually, and letting us stand here and ramble, which is my favorite pastime, is to ramble. And I think the only thing that I would want to say is that hopefully people come away with some, I mean, not that we dropped, like, tons of knowledge, but it like gives people like the opportunity to be like, maybe there's something more that I want to open up a book and learn a little bit more about, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Part of the best thing about being in modern America is Google and books, and there's so much knowledge that's available to us at our fingertips. And I think that sometimes, especially nowadays, that instead of, you can't change everybody's mind, but you can change your own mind and the people that are closest to you, and being able to have conversations with people and the people that are closest to you that you love. And that's where I think it all starts, is to be able to have hard conversations with the people that you love the most.
And intricate conversations too, you know.
Yeah, so hopefully
we've discussed. I feel like you should talk about your
my barbecue.
The barbecue.
I was telling a friend. I was actually telling Jasmine that sometimes people are so concerned with like getting their point across or like having everyone believe their point of view. It's almost like if you go to a barbecue and you have one vegan friend, you're not going to get, if you show a PETA video before everyone eats dinner, it's not going to go over pretty well. No one's changing their mind about meat. But if you go into the barbecue and you bring maybe a recipe or you bring something like a Beyond Burger, something else, maybe I'll get somebody to be like, maybe I could change. Maybe I'll understand this. Here's a pamphlet. This is a website I could lead you to. You know what I mean? No one's changing someone's mind, just ramming stuff down their throat like, you suck as a person, you're a racist. But if you're empathetic, understanding, considerate,
which I think it's a, when you're in this day and age with like social media, and we, I mean, luckily we have so many friends that like kind of stand behind it and they support us and they, you know, you love the, us, but because they're so passionate and they want to get the word out to as many people as they can, as fast as they can. And so then they get on social media.
You come on as a racial tyrant.
Yeah. And then somebody says something and it's like Black Lives Matter. And they're like, All Lives Matter. And they're like, saw you in your profile picture. Shouldn't have worn the blue pants, you know? And so I'm like, no one's listening to you. Tearing people down.
But you start at home. You start with maybe your racist grandma that says some like weird, like,
yeah, like undertone.
Yeah, or maybe educated about Aunt Jemima, or pointer to a really good movie on Netflix, or a great book that you read, or a podcast that you heard. That, I think, is the way to change people's mind. And it might not change anybody's mind, but also realizing that sometimes loving somebody in spite and taking the time, and maybe it doesn't change tomorrow, but maybe over time.
Right.
But also realizing that maybe don't give them a pass either.
Yeah.
But it's still not okay to be not a great human.
It's not okay to be a piece of shit.
Exactly.
So what's your websites? What's the best way for people to reach out, contact you guys, follow you? Everything. Because you guys, we talked before we started recording, but you do a lot.
Yeah.
Our website is alamodeslc.com. And it's an easy way to kind of do a styling appointment. You can schedule your styling appointments online. We have a brick and mortar boutique downtown where we do boutique, women's boutique shopping, and also do personal styling, personal women's parties. Just kind of a little bit of everything. Like, just over, what's our address? 265 East, 900 South.
Downtown.
Just right downtown, which is great. We have a great neighborhood.
Yeah. I also am the regional manager of Lucky 13 and Lucky's Iron Door, or Puerto Rico Public House is like that whole thing, which most people really, really, really love their burgers, and it's pretty well known all over the state. So,
and then I am the general manager of the Garage on Beck, which is a honky tonk roadhouse in North Salt Lake. Live music, real good food, good time, great patio, especially right now for social distancing.
Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you. It's been a good time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Have you ever been to Grantsville? It's like a vacation.
Kind of. Yeah. It's
I deal with some passive-aggressive racism every single day.
There's so many people who are scared that they are racist or that they are biased.
The wheels turn a lot slower when you're already set back so much farther than other people.
Can't we just be one race, the human race? And I'm like, oh, absolutely, we would love that. But we've got to, like, deal with the uncomfortable truths first.